name's Alvin. I'm an addict.
Hey, Alvin.
Hello, family. Good to see everybody this afternoon. And I'm really starting to get a sense of family just since these men have been staying at my house, and I'm truly, truly grateful to understand and begin to learn about where I came from and what it's about and the lineage that I share now. And it's been truly a great experience already. I agree with Tommy. The first person that's going to share with you this afternoon, though, is Jack W. from Tacoma, Washington.
I'm an addict. My name's Jack. And I'm glad that we're all here. I mean, what an occasion that we can gather at this time in particular and celebrate Narcotics Anonymous' birthday. And that there's still people in this room that have an infinite amount of information about our history, in particularly the early days. In the early days, we're not stress-free. And you will hear and you will learn from some people, perhaps maybe even me. I doubt it, but we'll see what happens with that. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for honoring me by asking me to come to Nashville. I have more than a passing acquaintance with Nashville since I went to school here for 2 years at Hillsboro High School. And I remember getting off the plane in September of 1955. The California Youth Authority said that they wanted me to come to the state of Tennessee, and I was terrified because you guys didn't have any drugs. Because you all hillbillies, would you? That was my thinking, you know, and we can laugh about that today, but I lived in a very small little quadrant of the town that I lived in, and I didn't go out of there. And very seldom, you know, except when I went to jail, which was often. However, I came here, and I had that sense of terror like we get when we're going someplace, and we have to have what we have to have, and we perceive that it's not going to be there. But I got here, and happily I found out within a few hours of where I could get whatever I wanted. And that's like God doing for me what I couldn't do for myself at the time, as he's often done, like me being here now, for example. But so it's nice to come back and revisit and see the city and see how it's changed. It's changed immensely, obviously, in 50 years. And I'm still alive, and I'm alive because of Narcotics Anonymous. I'm alive because there was some people who came before me that laid out the groundwork. My first meeting was in 1966. It was in November. It was in Los Angeles. It was rainy. It was cold, and I was sick. And somebody had told me erroneously that I can go to the Narcotics Anonymous meeting and I could find somebody that would help me get well. That there would be somebody that wanted to cop after the meeting. That didn't happen. Nobody offered to take me home. I smelled. Hygiene was not very high on my list. And my parole officer was not very happy with my behavior. And I wanted somebody to go talk to him. And so I wanted those three things, mainly, get out of the ring, get loaded, and have somebody lie to my parole officer for me. And they invited me to keep coming back and that they weren't going to take me home, talk to my parole officer, or give me any money. And I left with every bit of information I'd ever need to know to stay clean the rest of my life, a day at a time, a situation at a time. But see, I was still arrogant. I was still not willing to give up, but it didn't matter whether I was ready or not. They gave me the information, so when it came time to give up, I knew what to do. You know, and I got out of prison the last time, and I'd been clean from 1966 to after I got popped a couple weeks after that meeting until 1971, and my clean date starts from then, December the 15th, 1971. I plan to keep that clean date because I've owned it now, see? It belongs to me, and nobody but me can take it from me. And I have a home group, and I suspect most of you do, and it's Tower Power on Saturday night. in Seattle, and those people are very important. I can feel them with me right now, and as I'm sure those of you that came to Nashville for this event can as well. You know, before I came to you folks, I never had that, you know. So Narcotics Anonymous literally gave me everything that I was going to ever need, you know, and continues to do that. It feeds my soul. I want to tell you a couple quick stories about some early NA things, and I'm going to tell you this, and there's people in this room that I've known for a very long time, and which is another blessing. Sometimes I don't look at it as a blessing, but it's a blessing nonetheless, is that I was one of those people who didn't seek to, how should I put this? Well, I didn't want to get popular through world service, just let me put it that way. A lot of people aspire to go to greater heights in Narcotics Anonymous, and God bless them. You know, because their service is very valuable and very important to the fellowship as a whole, regardless of what their reason for going into service is. Because I like to do area stuff, you know, and I like to do home group stuff, and I like to do that. So I didn't really aspire to do that, so I didn't go that direction. However, I was able to participate in that process by getting involved in literature review committees and things like that. There's a lot of things locally that I could do, in being a group secretary and in that. And then you can be a group secretary if you can breathe on a mirror and it fogged up a little bit, you're it, you know. I mean, it was just that way. And, you know, you'd be loaded, and if you fog that mirror up, well, you're leading the meeting, you know. And many people loaded led some very, very good meetings in Narcotics Anonymous. Some really good meetings. In 1970, I was fairly active, and I'm going all over hell and back, and I had this vision, me and another member who's clean over in New Mexico, had this vision of having this candlelight meeting. I had rented leased a house from Pepe and Jeanette, and sat on a hill overlooking Eagle Rock and parts of Glendale, and it was just a beautiful location. I mean, it was too beautiful to stay in, you know. So I went to work. I worked every day. I went to a meeting someplace every night, and I went to UCLA at night as well. And so I wasn't only there but a few hours a day, you know, mostly to sleep. So I really didn't get to enjoy it as it could have been. And so we had this dream of having this candlelight meeting, and we're going to have a little non-offensive incense and some soft jazz, you know, KBCA, Los Angeles. And if any of the girls wanted to stay over, we'd let them do that. Not being honest, we are horn dogs, you know. And that scheme never came to fruition, thank God, for them as well as us. But the night that it was supposed to kick off, I came home from Long Beach, and I started going up the hill, and I noticed all this fire equipment, but I didn't see the hill on fire. You know, and it hadn't struck yet. You know? So I'm winding up this hill, and this is 2 days after Thanksgiving. You know, life's going great. I'm making more money than I ever had in my life. And all of a sudden, I get up there, and it became clear that the house was gone. And I went into a, like, momentary shock. I say momentary. It lasted until I got over to Pepe's house. And I backed off that hill, and somehow or another, I didn't hit any of that fire equipment, and I'm just, for the first time in my life, in this panic that I'd never really been in before. And it's like 5 o'clock in the morning, and I'm screaming and knocking on the door and waking up Jeanette and the boys, and Pepe came to the door, and I explained to him what happened, and he said, well, you're not hurt. Was the dog hurt? No. He said, screw that house. I got insurance. Come on in and go to bed, you know. And there's another member of Narcotics Anonymous who just reached out and did the next right thing, you know. And that's the first time I'd ever had that experience with anybody, you know. And then people from the South Bay, we didn't have that many meetings there, and they came up, and a couple of them were people that I'd done time with, and they brought me some skivvies and some undershirts and some socks and stuff, because all I had left was what was on my back. And I was very thankful that they knew exactly what to do, and it just did it, you know. And so the candlelight meeting never came off, but the meeting that I was secretary of at the YWCA, that's a whole nother story. Don't take much for you to figure it out. I mean, you're all bright people, you know, and all these people came, and they just reached out and loved me and told me, you know what, you're in the right place, and we love you, and we can share this. We will gift this stuff to you. And so that was one of the main events early in recovery, you know. But in 1971, in December, I had this place called the Pasadena Project, and it was a nice house, and I moved in, 10 dopamines, with a doctor living next door, did what 10 dopamines do to me. You know, they started talking out the side of her neck, the doctor, and she'd write scripts for him. I didn't, you know, and because I was so locked in, and I'm going to show a couple people, one of which is in this room right now, how to do a recovery house, you know. I didn't want to let go of it, you know. I just didn't want to let go of it. And eventually I stopped talking to the sponsor I had at the time, and I didn't have any defense. I quit praying. My butt was parked in a meeting every day, and I chose to get loaded. And that's why I got the December 15th, 1971 clean day. And so that was a great humbling and necessary experience for me. And since then, I've been coming back a day at a time, sometimes getting involved in some controversy in the fellowship. There's some of you will remember the minority boys back in the middle 80s, and I was a little part of that little unhappy contingent. And this is a history conference, so it's necessary that some of this stuff I mention, otherwise I'd just be lying, you know. Because we didn't like some changes that happened in the white book, and we took exception to it, and then we just went about our lives, man, you know. And what became very clear through that process was that I become uninvolved in, I have no voice in trying to change it. If I make a conscious decision, I'm not going to be involved in it, then I don't have any say in what the hell happens. And so that was another thing, coming to accept that we are a growing, dynamic fellowship, and that as we grow and expand, that our literature is going to grow and expand. And it's going to grow and expand in directions other than I ideally would prefer it to be. See, I still am a relic of the past. I want it to be the old readings, those ones I was comfortable with, those ones that when we had a little white book without stories, then the one when we had the little white book with stories that we can carry in our pocket, you know, and we can pull it out before our basic text. And so I've been through all of those changes and resistance and accepting, then resisted again, then accepting again. And I've watched our fellowship grow, and those of you that were fortunate, there's going to be more people here at this event than was at the First World Convention, and there's several of us here that were at the First World Convention, Narcotics Anonymous, at the La Mirada Country Club. There's going to be more people attending. That speaks loudly of Narcotics Anonymous. This is one small area in a worldwide global fellowship that has touched hundreds of thousands of lives. We got meetings in over 100 countries. We got our literature being on a daily basis. They're just in so many different languages is being reproduced. You can see by the World Service order list the different languages you can get our material in. And what a blessing that is from what we started out with. It's a real blessing. I mean, it just didn't happen. I'd like to ask, just stop and think, how many people have under a year in recovery? God bless you. God bless you. You're the reason that we're here. You may not believe that. You may find that hard to swallow, because if you don't come, we don't have anybody to talk to. We don't. And we have to talk. We have to tell our stories. We have to share our experience, strength, and hope. And if we just keep it shared with each other, man, we might as well all go to the graveyard. You know, and that's my opinion. And it's probably going to be countered by somebody. But you're the lifeblood of this fellowship. You are, man. And being able to come in recovery at this day and age, to be part of the maturation of Narcotics Anonymous is unbelievable. Because I believe, like that old song, we've just begun. And we're 50 years old and we've just begun. We're learning new things. We're going to new places. Our technology's changed. We're able to touch other addicts in ways that we never could touch them before. You know, it used to be just on a one-to-one in a meeting, or at an H&I event, or a PI event perhaps, or they had the loners thing, and now they got the internet. And that just opened up Pandora's box in Narcotics Anonymous. And a lot of people have a lot of feelings about that, but there are men and women who are in Narcotics Anonymous today that founded by stumbling into some chat room. And I get emotional about that because I think of the ways in which we touch each other's lives in ways that we never dreamed possible. Who would ever thought about the internet? You know, and so our focus, and so it's allowed me to change some of my focus and accept some things. And that's not a meeting and doesn't substitute for a meeting in Narcotics Anonymous, but it can be a springboard for another man or woman, man, who's looking for a way out, who God led to place A, man, so they can get here, you know. And so our technologies are changing in all that regards, and we're alive and dynamic, and to be a part of it is just, it's just overwhelming sometimes, very overwhelming. And you're going to hear some things from some people this weekend who have been involved in all areas of Narcotics Anonymous. And they're going to certainly leave you with a lot more than what I am. And I'm grateful to be here to be part of that group of men and women who are going to share with you and experience it with you. I get to experience it with you. That's great. You know, I don't know. It's phenomenal. And, you know, I've been thinking about Jimmy a lot lately. Because we've been talking about Jimmy, Alvin and Dixie and Bill and Terry and I and Holly and Chuck, we were talking about him last night, you know, and I've been thinking a lot about Jimmy lately, and I remember the unselfish acts that he did so that we can be here, of him keeping the candle lit when other people jumped off the ship, of all his money and time and energy. You know how grateful, ungrateful I am sometimes about that. Sometimes I forget that there's men and women who came before me and after me a lot, who so unselfishly gave of themselves so that I could be here. And sometimes I have the audacity to slip into indifference and complacency. I don't feel indifferent or complacent. I haven't for a long time. And I do whatever I do, and I do it with being thankful that I'm asked to do something. And I certainly, when I received the call to come to Nashville, I was shocked, to be perfectly frank, because I don't feel that my contribution was any greater or any lesser than anybody else's, but there's a lot of people that I would love to have seen here. You know, there's people a couple of years back, there's a couple of us and a few of us in this room that was at the 25th World Service Conference, and we were asked to share about Narcotics Anonymous, and there's a lot of people that are still alive that were noticeably absent, you know, and I felt their presence there on that stage when we were doing what we were doing, and I can kind of feel that same thing now. You know, but more than that, I think of the unsung heroes that we had that made it possible for a lot of us to be here. And some of them were rather controversial, and I'm not going to mention any names, but those that have been around a while know about who they are. And we know that they were consistent. And we know they loved Narcotics Anonymous. And they stood on principle. And I think about those people, and they're here with me, and I know wherever they are at that big meeting in the sky or wherever in the heck we go, that they're just smiling, man, saying thank you, man. Thank you for keep coming back, thank you for being part of this fellowship. I can't explain it other than that. If you're new, I hope you hear, you see, or you feel something this evening that's going to keep you coming back to Narcotics Anonymous. Because it's a great way to live. There's one. I'm going to tell one other story, and I'm out of gas. You know, I'm still feeling this thing, and I just feel overwhelmed. Back in, I think it was 1970, or it might have been in 69, it was before I got loaded, we had very few people that were doing service work in Narcotics Anonymous. And in particular, we didn't have a lot of women that were doing any service work. And so men were taking meetings to the women's facility in CRC, you know, which today is a definite no-no for all the obvious reasons. And not to mention that, you know, there's vast differences other than the physical. And but we did it because we wanted the meeting of Narcotics Anonymous to go in there. And so there's a lady here who, excuse me, who I invited to go out there, and it was pouring down rain, and I was living up in Pasadena, and I drove down to Orange County, picked her up and took her out there, and she loved it, man. You know, and she found out who, you know, to get in touch with about continuing that, and I didn't ever have to go out there again. You know, but I was willing to drive out there just so they had some kind of meeting of Narcotics Anonymous. Not because I'm a good guy or any of that, it's because I didn't want to die, man. And Jimmy told me, man, you do that regardless of whether you want to or not. He said, anything that you can do, Jack, while you're driving to the meeting, while you're driving back, while you're at the meeting, you can do better when you get back. I thought, that's stupid, you know, but it's true. There's nothing that I've ever done that, when I put doing first things first, that hasn't been better afterwards, you know, and so that's good, and thank you, committee, for all your hard work. It's evidenced by the people here from all over. I met some people from Pennsylvania, Mississippi, Washington, D.C. We've got people here from Pennsylvania, from Washington, from California, from Utah, and some other places I didn't mention. You're probably like, oh, man, mention this state. they're going to probably have some kind of roll call or something tomorrow sometime, and so you got to come back to each meeting so you can experience, and so when they call your state, you can raise your hand and get up and clap. But I hope you all just soak it in, man, you know, and feel free to, we're all approachable. Everybody that came here to Nashville is approachable. Don't feel like just because we have a lot of time and you don't have much time that you can't talk to us. You can ask us anything you want. and you may get a very candid answer you don't want. That can very well happen, you know. But you feel free to do that, you know. And we're here to support each other and not really be otherwise. You know, it is in the spirit of love that we gather, in the spirit of love that we share. Yeah, it's all about love, man. You know, and love heals all wounds. It really does. But sometimes it takes time. Sometimes it takes being at the right place at the right time. And right now, this moment, I'm at the right place at the right time. God bless you.